ESPN Plus, Disney Plus, Hulu Plus, Paramount Plus, Apple TV Plus. Aren't there enough of these pluses out there?
Well, not yet.
Yes, it's Lance and Matt Plus, a new podcast presented by WFOB and WBBI.
Okay, now we've got enough pluses.
So let's join Lance Morris and Matt Kaufman for Lance and Matt Plus.
Welcome on into this edition of Lance and Matt Plus. As you heard, a podcast exclusively heard for WFOB and WBVI. Hear us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere else you get your podcasts. I'm Lance Morris. He's Matt Common. Matt, how are we doing?
We're doing great, although you know that's not my name for this particular episode.
That is true.
You know that's not my name for this particular episode. Every year. We do this song and dance every year. On this day, I am Matt McShay Kuiper Jr.
That's too long.
Matt McShay Kuiper III?
You made it longer.
Matt McShay? Matt Kuiper? Which one are we going with?
I feel like, I don't know, I forget which one we did last time, so...
I thought it was Matt Kuiper Jr. last year. Like, I think it was... I'm okay with going with that again. I feel good about that.
That sounds right.
I think that's what we ended up going with. But yes, happy draft week, everybody. NFL draft, it's one of the few reasons I get kept around at this station, I'm pretty sure. But no, it's doing good. Very excited about the draft. It's been a fun, little bit of off season. I've missed you in the time since the end of basketball season. I've missed all of our fans and listeners out there. So hopefully you guys enjoy this one. I've been putting it together most of the last week to try and figure out where I think players are going to go, if there's going to be some trades happening, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be a good one. I'm looking forward to it.
But naturally, since it is, like you said, it's mock draft time for the first round of the NFL draft, I have to, of course, bring back this piece of gold that I created just about 2 years ago.
There you go.
With the first round pick, Matt. Who in the hell is Matt Kaufman?
Forget it.
Who in the hell is Matt Kaufman?
Forget it. What do they take?
Matt.
My neighbor has more credentials than
Matt Kaufman.
And my neighbor's a postman.
And naturally, that even has an even bigger meaning this time around, too.
It does. That's... Oh. You know what? It is a shame that he recently passed, but that is... That is rent free in every draft pundit's head for all time. And let's just call it as it is. If Bill Tobin,
that's a fine.
Was it?
It's Bill Tobin. That's a fine.
Tobin, I'm sorry. If Bill Tobin had not gone off in that interview like that, I don't think Mel Kiper is still doing what he's doing. Because not only did Tobin give him all the credibility in the world by going after him on TV like that. But then Kuiper got proven right by the guy they drafted was a complete bust. Don't get me wrong. Trent Dilfer was nowhere near any better. But he was a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Yeah.
All the same. So it's like, he kind of got that one right. He didn't get it completely right because he thought Trent Dilfer was going to be like the next great quarterback in the NFL. And as a Cleveland Browns, Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan and someone with eyeballs, I can tell you Trent Dilfer was not that. But he did win a Super Bowl, and the Colts didn't in the time that Trent Dilfer was in the NFL. So you know what? Kuiper got proven right, but in all sincerity, I mean, Bill Tobin is now infamously remembered for that, but he was a very, very solid GM for Indianapolis and Baltimore for the time that he was there. So it is a bit of a shame that he did pass, but man, that little audio bit you made is just gold year in and year out.
So let's go ahead, get right into it. Of course, the Chicago Bears have the first overall pick. And if people don't remember, it's not because of necessarily the Bears doing anything, you know, in particularly bad. It's because they got the pick from Carolina.
Yeah, and you know what? It's Carolina's probably kicking themselves a little bit on this one because I know they liked Bryce Young, and I made it no secret I am not the biggest Caleb Williams fan in the world. Not that I think he's bad, but I think the hype around him has gotten moderately ridiculous. People saying he's a better, more athletic Patrick Mahomes is just stupid. And I think a lot of people are going to be eating their words, the level of hype they've said about Caleb Williams. But yeah, you got to give Chicago some credit. Had the number one pick last year, traded out of it, traded it again to move up and do a little bit of moving in the draft last year, picked up a few more picks. And this year they still end up with two top 10 picks, one of them being number one overall. I mean, that is, if Chicago can't figure it out and finally build a good team and a competitive team that's sustainable after this 2-year run, I think they deserve to not have draft picks anymore. Just immediate pass should just come up, whatever it's their pick in the future going forward. But with that being said, I will say, not a surprise, first pick in the draft is going to be Caleb Williams. He has been, from the jump, the pre-anointed first overall pick. Didn't even matter who was going to have the first overall pick. It was going to be Caleb Williams. It could have been a team that already had a great quarterback. It was still going to be Caleb Williams. So first overall pick in the draft, Chicago Bears, they're going to take Caleb Williams. I personally am not the biggest fan of the pick. I am a lot higher on some other quarterbacks that are in this draft, in particular Jaden Daniels and Michael Penix Jr. But Caleb Williams is going to be good. They're putting together a pretty good team over there. I still think they need another wide receiver. But adding DeAndre Swift, so you got an elite running back core between Herbert and now DeAndre Swift. You still have DJ Moore. They just traded for recently. You have a decent offensive line that you're starting to put together. Caleb Williams is a pretty decent improv guy. He's not bad at it. I don't think he's as good as other people make him out to be. But I think what they're putting together in Chicago, he should at least be decent. I don't think he's going to be a bust. I'll say that much right now. I am not suggesting he's going to be a bust when I say I'm not high on him. I just don't think he's the second coming that a lot of people are advertising him as. He's going to be a good quarterback. I think he helps turn Chicago around. But at the same time, I still think there's going to be a bit of a rough patch there because, just for my two cents, a lot of his pre-draft stuff has shown me someone who he can take a beating, but he can't take a punch, if that makes sense. Like, if he has 50,000 fans booing and screaming his name and calling him everything but a good, decent human being, he doesn't care. He's still going to play. But one person brings up something critical, he seems to take it personally and not in the best of ways. So I'm a little concerned about how he's going to handle Chicago in that regard, because they are a notoriously fickle fan base. You don't make Saturday Night Live skits about a fan base because they are not hard to please sometimes. So it's going to be Caleb Williams at number one. I think he has a chance to be good. I'm just not as high on him as other people are. There's other quarterbacks I think are going to be better out of this draft. But I think Williams does give Chicago what they're looking for.
And you have to go back and probably even do a little more research, but when was the last time a quarterback that was going to be picked number one, you know, went to a team that I'm not going to sit here and say the Bears should win the division next year, but it's not as if the Bears don't have talent now going to be surrounding Caleb Williams either.
No. And to tell you, closest comparison to that would actually be the 2018 Cleveland Browns with Baker Mayfield, or 2019 Cleveland Browns, my apologies. Gets drafted, helps turn the team around. It's a competitive team. They may not win the division. They're kind of in the playoff discussion for a little bit of that season. And then, you know, things kind of go off the tracks the next year with Freddie Kitchens as their head coach. But that's probably the closest one it's been. I mean, really, number one overall picks, you're going to a bad team. And the fact of the matter is, Chicago, this is not Chicago's pick. It's Carolina's pick. But Chicago's picking 9, which means out of 32 teams, they're the 23rd worst team. It's not the best situation in the world. But compared to other number one overall picks in recent years, I think what Chicago has going for it is, one, a pretty competitive division. I do think they can be competitive overall. I think Detroit's still the presumptive favorite in the division. Green Bay's looking good again. Minnesota's looking like they're a quarterback away. So it's a competitive division. Their defense is pretty decent. Not amazing, but pretty decent. Like, they can hold their own. I don't think he's going to be expected to win games for them. I feel their expectation for him is simply to not lose them games while he gets used to the NFL. So I think he'll be good. I think Chicago does turn around a little bit. I think they'll be around a 500 team this season, and he'll definitely be in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. I don't think he'll win it, but he's definitely going to be in the discussion and be someone that Chicago fans will be happy about. He also fits the type of quarterback Chicago fans seem to always want. He's a little bit bigger than Justin Fields. He's athletic, but he's not uber athletic. I think Justin Fields, just personality wise and player style wise, just wasn't a fit for what Chicago wanted. So I'm still very high on Justin Fields. I think he'll get a 1 year prove it in Pittsburgh and either re-sign with them, or he's going to get bank from some team next offseason. But yeah, Caleb Williams, I think he'll do good for them. I think he can help turn it around. I don't see them going from zero to hero kind of situation. I think the North is just too good for that to be the case. But it should be the start of a good turnaround for Chicago.
Second overall pick, we have the Washington Commanders. Of course, a lot has been made of them with the name change within the last few years, and of course the ownership change as well. So where are you looking to go, and a new head coach on top of that? So where would you be looking to go for the Commanders?
Well, it's going to be under center, since they traded Sam Howell for a pack of peanuts and some chewing gum. So it's going to be Jaden Daniels, quarterback from LSU. I think Heisman Trophy winner. The kid broke all of Joe Burrow's records. That's the end of the discussion. That's why, for me, Jaden Daniels is my top quarterback in the draft by a wide margin. It's... You don't break the records that Joe Burrow set with Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. And don't get me wrong, they do have a good receiver down there with Brian Thomas Jr. But Jaden Daniels was great in Arizona State. He became elite at LSU. Their record may not have reflected that, but I kind of view what Jaden Daniels has done. The way I grade quarterbacks, I don't grade their stats are very important. Their stats, their measurables are very important. I like to see what they can do when they don't really have anything around them. I mean, you look at a guy like Lamar Jackson in college when he was at Louisville. He had nobody on that team with him. It was Lamar Jackson versus 11 people on defense every time. Jaden Daniels, yeah, he had Brian Thomas Jr. But before that, Arizona State, the only guy he really had was Rashad White at running back. So the fact that he's been able to be elite at two separate places, while the records may not have been amazing, the stats are good, and he kept the team in it time and time again. I really think he's actually a great quarterback. I see a lot of Lamar Jackson in terms of his athletic ability. I actually see a lot of Russell Wilson, though, at the same time, with Jaden Daniels. I actually have his ceiling as Russell Wilson. So for me, Washington goes out, gets a new face of the franchise. I think it's a different animal than Chicago. I think Washington is looking at Jaden Daniels same way Cleveland Browns fans look at every quarterback we draft, where it's like, you're our messiah, you're our savior, you have to fix everything. I don't know if that's necessarily fair to Jaden Daniels or not, but I think he will be a very, very effective closing in on elite quarterback very quickly in the NFL. I do see his career trajectory being an elite player in the league, especially the way the league is going. And I think Washington gets a steal with him even at number two.
I think the only real issue I see is, I mean, just Washington as a whole, the franchise has been very unstable, you know, over the last few years, you know, and I think obviously that is looking to trend in a different direction now under the new ownership group, but you also still have a division that's going to be very tough. You have the Eagles, who, you know, just a few years ago weren't in the Super Bowl. The Cowboys were, you know, head and shoulders seemingly above everybody during last regular season. And it wasn't that long ago that the Giants were a decent team too. I mean, they obviously had a bad year last year, but you're going into one of the, the more strong divisions in football, and I know there's not going to be a lot of expectations on them at least to win right away, but it's certainly still a tough division to be heading into.
Yeah, and I think talking about the instability, look, at the end of the day, the stink that is the Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen era is finally getting washed clean. Josh Harris comes in as the new owner. Honestly, seems like a pretty legit dude. It seems like he might end up being the right man for the job in Washington. Dan Quinn, very respected coach. I'll be candid, I was really surprised that they didn't go with Bieniemy based on what he did with Sam Howell last year as their quarterback. So I'm a little surprised they didn't stay in-house for that one. But at the end of the day, you're right. The NFC East, very competitive. I'd say one semi-elite team with Philly, and then two teams that can peak pretty quickly with Dallas and the Giants. But I'll be honest, I'm selling on the Cowboys this year. I think it might be a train wreck of a season this year, just if we're going to be candid. I really don't see them having the extreme level of success that they've been having in the regular season. So it wouldn't surprise me if Dallas ends up being one of those teams that has a clear house this coming up offseason. But yeah, Washington could compete. I mean, under Ron Rivera, they did compete and they did make the playoffs twice with that team. So they did it with Alex Smith and Taylor Heineke as their quarterbacks for those two playoff appearances. So I think bringing in someone like Jaden Daniels with the players that they still have on roster, there is some good potential there. Do I think Jaden Daniels is going to have an RG3 level effect, turn it around, win Rookie of the Year, get them in the playoffs right away? Probably not, just because you don't really see quarterbacks too often make that hard of an adjust from good to elite. I mean, CJ Stroud, what he did last year was amazing. Justin Herbert, what he did a few years ago was incredible. It seems to be every couple years. I don't really see any of the quarterbacks in this year's draft doing that, but they're going to be good fits for their system. So Jaden Daniels, I love his athleticism. I love his arm strength. I think the idea of pairing him with Scary Terry out there at a wide receiver, along with Jahan Dotson and type of receiver that he is, I think there's a lot of opportunity for Washington to really light it up here for the next few years.
Now looking at the number three pick, you have the New England Patriots, and also new era there with no Bill Belichick, Gerard Mayo now their head coach. Where do you think the Patriots look to go? It also does look like they're in a spot where they may be one of the teams that looks to potentially move down as well.
Yeah, but first, before we do that, let's just sit peacefully for a moment and embrace the fact that New England has a top five pick. Just savor it, just bask in it for a few. Like, we're going to do this with Kansas City in about 5 or 6 years as well, but like, just for the brief moment that New England is down, let's just embrace the suck that they have turned into. It's so nice. I do have them as a team that could trade down. I think they're a strong candidate to trade down, not necessarily because they really either want Williams or Daniels. I think they're very high on Drake May personally, and I do think they will end up staying at three to take Drake May. But if there's a team that's looking at like Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr., they're going to trade with New England. New England is the team they're going to have to trade with to get one of those two guys. So yes, New England is a team that could very easily trade. Minnesota comes to mind for trading up with them. Las Vegas comes to mind trading up with them. Even a team, to be honest, like Pittsburgh, if they're really genuinely not sold on Russell Wilson or Justin Fields, they could be a team that trades up. They really could. For the sake of this draft, though, I do have them staying at number three, and I think they're going to pick Drake May. Now, I've said a lot of things about Caleb Williams. I mentioned him very high on Jaden Daniels. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I feel you've been bit once with Mitch Trubisky. You got bit a second time with Sam Howell. Why do you go back to the same biting well for Drake May? To his credit, Drake May is probably the best of those three quarterbacks that I just mentioned. But I just don't know if he has it. Like, I really will be honest. I don't know if he has it, but the hype around him has been very similar to Caleb Williams. Coming in as a freshman, Drake May was pre-annoyed as, oh, this guy in 2024, 25 is going to be a top three pick. Just look at him. Look at his measurables. Look at this. Look at that. And it's, he's looked good at times. But also at times, he's looked brutal. So I look at this pick. This is, he's going to give you the best of Mitch Trubisky and Sam Howell. I think he's a stat padder like Sam Howell was in Washington this year. And I think he gives you the build of a typical quarterback like you get from Mitch Trubisky. And I think he will be good. I don't think he's going to be bad, but I think his ceiling is like Ryan Tannehill, maybe. And to be honest, I think his floor is a lot more in line with a Mac Jones. So it's that I kind of worry with New England, they're kind of picking the same problems that they had with Mac Jones, outside of him being a cheap, dirty player as well, which is astonishing to say about a quarterback. But it, for what New England's trying to do, bringing in Drake May, it signals, hey, this is a new era. We realize we're high in the draft. That usually means we need help at quarterback. And it's no secret, that is probably their weakest position. So going with Drake May, he'll be good. I don't think he's going to be amazing. But if they build around him the right way and kind of build to his strengths, I think he could become a pretty solid quarterback in the NFL.
And if that does hold true, that it is those three quarterbacks as the top three picks in the draft, it instantly reminds me of not too long ago in, I believe it was 2021 draft with Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and Trey Lance. And I think there are some very easy parallels to make in that Trevor Lawrence was kind of similar to how Caleb Williams was. He was kind of anointed as he's going to be the guy when the draft comes around. I don't think you can, it's definitely not apples to apples for Daniels and May to Wilson and Lance, because they both played a heck of a lot more than Trey Lance even did in college, because of the COVID year, he only played one game his year heading into the draft. So none of them have quite that issue, but it does lead to the thought of, oh, well, if there's if it's those three picks and only one kind of pans out, that would, you know, obviously spell doom for some of those other couple teams.
Oh, sure. And you know what? I'd actually make a similar comparison, not necessarily to 2020, which is a good one. I think that's fair, but I still think it's a little early on those guys. I would say for me, the slam dunk comparison is 1999. Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, Akili Smith, 1, 2, and 3. Tim Couch was the super hyped up, the stat monster from, at the time, a competitive school with Kentucky. Kind of seemed like he was predestined to be the number one pick. He was big, fit the prototype mold, checked all the boxes, had the cannon for an arm. That's Caleb Williams. Jaden Daniels is Donovan McNabb, the guy who comes out of nowhere from a good program, really becomes elite, seems like he's a multi-dimensional quarterback, may not be as celebrated as some of the other quarterbacks in that draft with him, but fact of the matter is he has the potential to be elite. And then Drake May, unfortunately, kind of reminds me of Akili Smith. Comes out of a college. At the time, Oregon was not really a big-name college. I mean, they were still around. They were still a Pac-12 or Pac-10 team at the time, and that's kind of what they were doing. But Akili Smith just kind of came out of nowhere, and it's like, oh, man, he's got all these measurables, but he didn't have any of the talent to go along with it. I think Drake May has more talent than that. I'm not suggesting he'll be as bad as Akili Smith, but I do see a lot of parallels in this draft to that 1999 draft as well.
Next pick we have number 4, Arizona Cardinals. And I think maybe just because you have the feeling that the top three teams are all going to go quarterback, it, you know, leaves many options open for the Cardinals as well. And knowing they also still have Kyler Murray as their quarterback, what direction do you think the Cardinals go?
They run and make an Arizona Cardinals size hole through the wall to drop off their card to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. It's this outside of Caleb Williams, I feel very confident that this may be the biggest lock of a draft pick in the top 10. Marvin Harrison Jr., what he brings in terms of his skill set as a wide receiver versus what Arizona needs out of their wide receiver room right now is such a perfect match. I don't even think they get to the 10-minute mark on the countdown for the pick is in. I think Arizona, unless somebody blows the doors off of the place with an offer for them, they're coming away with Marvin Harrison Jr. And personally, I think they're coming away with the best wide receiver prospect since Calvin Johnson. And I am fully aware that Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Mike Williams, and a lot of really great prospects are in between Calvin Johnson and Marvin Harrison Jr. I just think Marvin Harrison Jr. is that elite. I truly do. Has he had a good pre-draft process? No. I don't know who's been giving him advice, but that person needs to be fired immediately. But the flip side of it, it's kind of the attitude that a lot of people had towards the end of the season this year for college. It's like, what does Marvin Harrison Jr. need to show anymore? What does he need to prove anymore? You know what you're going to get out of him. It's a guy with height, athleticism, jump ball ability. He's basically the best of his dad, Marvin Harrison, elite hands, phenomenal route running, great ability to create space and gapping between him and the DBs, and Randy Moss, because he has the same height and jump ball ability. I'm not someone who tries to get super fixated on a particular pick or lock in and say someone's going to be elite. I will say candidly, though, if Marvin Harrison does not pan out, it's because Arizona did something wrong with him. I think Marvin Harrison is going to be an elite player in the NFL almost immediately. Like, I think he's going to have that level of impact right off the bat.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of notes because we feel pretty much lockstep with Marvin Harrison.
There's just no way. I put it on par with Calvin Johnson. I think it is near impossible for him not to become a successful wide receiver in the NFL.
And to round out the top five, we have the LA Chargers at the fifth overall pick. Of course, a lot to be made with them bringing in Jim Harbaugh after everything that happened at Michigan over the last couple years. They also lost a lot of their skill guys, Eckler, Williams, and Keenan Allen, among others, all already on other teams. So where do you think the Chargers look to go?
Well, considering you don't have any wide receivers and Malik Nabers is just sitting there, and any other year that Marvin Harrison Jr. is not in the draft, we're talking about Malik Nabers in the same level of can't-miss prospect, it's Malik Nabers. There's no denying it. I think he's a phenomenal pick for them. He fits what they like to do. I think he'll be a great safety net for Justin Herbert. And the thing that works out great for him, being in a Jim Harbaugh system, he's not going to be expected to come in and completely carry the offense from the jump. Jim Harbaugh is going to be a run first, pass second kind of offense, which works for Nabers because he's also, for my money, probably one of the best run blocking receivers in this draft. So I think he's going to bode pretty well in LA as a Charger. I think he and Herbert are going to have a great connection. And I just love his athleticism. I love what Nabers brings to the table. He is such a dynamic, all-around wide receiver. Again, it's kind of a shame that he's in the same draft as Marvin Harrison Jr. because I think Malik Nabers is kind of getting lost in the shuffle a bit when he's probably going to be just as good as Marvin Harrison in year one. I think he's going to have a very similar career. I feel he's another can't-miss kind of receiver. And the Chargers, I feel pretty confident that they had a feeling that he'd be there at number five. Otherwise, I don't think they let Keenan Allen and Mike Williams walk. Just as simple as that.
Number six overall, we have the New York Giants after, I don't think there's anything you can say short of calling last season a complete disaster between injuries and everything else that happened with the team. Where do you think they look to go at pick number six?
So with the sixth pick in the draft, they absolutely take anyone that is willing to take Daniel Jones's contract. that is good. Look, there's no denying that the quarterback contracts over the past few years, the NFL kind of got a little drunk, is the best way to put it. Russell Wilson was not worth $230 million to Denver. Deshaun Watson has absolutely not been worth $250 million to the Cleveland Browns. And I think anyone with a functioning motor cortex would tell you that Daniel Jones was not worth $160 million. When that then cost you one of your offensive linemen and really your best player on the team in Saquon Barkley. So for the Giants, I think they will draft a time machine to try and undo that horrible, horrible, horrible mistake. But since they're stuck here and I don't see them reaching for a quarterback, they're not going to waste a pick at number six to do that. I do think the Giants are another trade down candidate. So New England and the Giants, I feel, are probably two of your best trade down candidates here in the top 10. But I see them staying. I think they're going to go with Roma Odunze from Washington is where I think they're going to go. Wide receiver from Washington. Regardless of who's at quarterback, you don't have any elite skill position players in your system anymore. You just don't. You have to build up the team around whoever the quarterback is. And for Daniel Jones, he is your quarterback for at least the time being. Even your backups with like Tommy DeVito and some of the other guys, you still have to have someone around them. Giants seem to have the same mindset that Cleveland Browns fans do, just to call it as it is, where your quarterback is supposed to fix everything. That's just not how the league works. That's never how the game of football has worked. But giving a guy like Odunze to this Giants team, he is another player who I think is just an all-purpose wide receiver. You want him in the slot, he can play in the slot. You want him outside, he can play outside. You want him as a run blocker, he's a pretty solid run blocker downfield. You want him as someone who's going to get separation, he ran in the high 4.3s, 4.4s at the combine. He's got the speed. I think being in Washington up until this season with Michael Penix, I think he kind of got lost in the shuffle as well, as this really good player that just nobody was really getting a chance to see too often. But I think Odunze will do very well with the Giants, and I think they'll also realize, oh, as long as we have good offensive weapons around them, we can have anybody. So Daniel Jones, we're like gonna change the locks to the building halfway through the season or something. I don't know. But it's the Giants are definitely going to quarterback next year, maybe a quarterback later in this draft to replace Daniel Jones. But in the meantime, even with a lame duck quarterback, Roma Odunze, wide receiver from Washington, is going to be a solid pickup for them.
At pick seven, we have the Tennessee Titans, another team with a new head coach this season. And again, last year, expectations weren't super high, but even then, the team seemed to fall short of those expectations, aside from kind of the good that they got to see from Will Levis. So where do you think the Titans go?
Saying good from Will Levis is, we're using the term so charitably, I think we could write it off on our taxes next year. They're going offensive line. I mean, they just invested heavily in Christian Kirk. They still have Treylon Burke at wide receiver as well. They invested in the eventual replacement with Tajay Spears for Derrick Henry. It is a rebuild. Kind of came in with Brian Callahan, who I didn't really like that hire to begin with. But they end up sticking with it. I like what Brian Callahan did by bringing in his dad, Bill Callahan, to be the offensive assistant head coach and offensive line coach. So I see them going tackle. I see them going Joe Alt from Notre Dame. I think it's a great pickup, pairing him with Peter Skoronski from last year. First round pick, I think you make a very formidable side of the offensive line where you will be able to protect Will Levis, because like him, hate him, think he was overhyped, think he was undervalued, whatever it may be, Will Levis is now their guy. Tannehill isn't there anymore, and Malik Willis, to be kind of candid, has not really had the opportunity and hasn't really looked like he has earned the opportunity to begin with. So I see them going Joe Alt, phenomenal pass protector, he's been one of those guys that you just kind of watched at Notre Dame the past few years, and just immediately he stood out on tape every time. Solid technique, great footwork. I mean, no surprise, his dad was an offensive lineman in the NFL as well, so he's going to be a good fit for Tennessee. I think it's a smart pick. It may not be the sexy pick, but it's going to be a smart pick that will help them out going forward, and hopefully is a sign of the Titans recognizing that you do actually need to build around your skill position players and actually get those picks right too. So Joe Alt, solid pick, first offensive lineman off the board, and I think he'll be a solid, solid tackle for years to come.
As you know, I've watched a lot of Notre Dame football over these last few seasons. Yeah, I know. Big stunner there.
No way.
So with that being said, I have seen a lot of Joe Alt, and yeah, he's the guy at tackle. I don't think there's much of a doubt about that. But where as an offensive line aficionado yourself, where do you kind of compare him to some of the guys, you know, we've seen over the last few years, just in terms of kind of being the guy? It reminds me a little of Penei Sewell. I don't know if they play the same at all, really, but it just kind of reminds me as one of those top guys. You know, I know the year that he was in the draft, he was like, oh, the Bengals need to take Penei Sewell rather than Ja'Marr Chase because of, you know, the offensive line problems, you know, they had and still kind of have a little bit to an extent. Where do you compare Jawalt to some of the other guys we've seen?
Well, first of all, as much as Ja'Marr Chase has been phenomenal for Cincinnati, I think the fact that Joe Burrow has not finished two of his first three seasons in the NFL because of injury sustained from quarterback sacks is an indicator they should have drafted Penei Sewell.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. I do like the Penei Sewell comparison. I actually lined him up more with Andrew Thomas from the Giants, if we're going to be honest. In that Andrew Thomas, Rashawn Slater from the Chargers kind of area, I think, to be candid, Joe Alt is not going to be hyper elite from the jump. I think everyone knew Penei Sewell was going to be elite. Everyone knew Tristan Wirfs was going to be elite. Everyone knew that those guys were just going to be top notch. Rashawn Slater kind of came out of the woodwork over years and proved to be a phenomenal tackle. I think he kind of fits in that vein. Out of recent draft picks, if you want my genuine comparison, I have him as Laremy Tunsil. I think he's a guy that just, he fits the mold. He's such a typical tackle that he's going to be just the prototype going forward. So I'd say his ceiling is probably Laremy Tunsil. So we're talking multiple Pro Bowls, multiple All-Pro. I see his floor probably around Andrew Thomas, where he's good. He's very good. But if you're leaving him on an island at the pro level, expecting him to do Joe Thomas things and like blocking three guys on one play, I just don't think he can do that kind of thing. So he's going to be very good. He's going to be in the top echelon of tackles very quickly in the NFL. I really want to see how Skoronski develops next to him as a guard to see if they can really make it elite, because he has the potential to be elite. So to answer your question, like Rashawn Slater, Andrew Thomas, kind of in that area, and his ceiling is going to be Laremy Tunsil.
Looking now at the number 8 pick, we have another team with a new coach in the Atlanta Falcons, and they have, you know, a good decent amount of skill guys already in place from really drafts over the last few seasons. So what direction do we see the Falcons going?
Oh, well, first I'll start by saying I think the Falcons made the best coaching hire of the offseason. I am unapologetically a Raheem Morris fan, not just because he was a coach in Tampa Bay. He was okay when he was there. You could tell it was too soon for him. You just could. What he's done since then, the type of coach he's become, on top of being the motivator and the player-first mentality guy that he's been. I mean, you watched that the Falcons posted the day one video when he met with the team and just everything that he was presenting with the team. There's no doubt in my mind the Falcons are going to be good under Raheem Morris. And the thing that happens with Raheem Morris is you're going to see Raheem Morris guys get drafted. It's what he did in Tampa Bay. It's kind of what he did when he was in Atlanta the first time, helping out with some of the defensive players. It's kind of what he did, kind of implementing and kind of instigating McVay and the staff there to bring in certain players in the secondary. One guy stands out to me in this draft as just an absolute Raheem Morris kind of pick, and it's Quinyon Mitchell, defensive back from Toledo. Toledo kid's going to go in the top 10. Mitchell, when you watch him on tape, he's Sauce Gardner. He's Jalen Ramsey. He is all those things that you want in a defensive back, except the name on the front of his jersey. If he was playing at an Ohio State, if he was playing at a Michigan State, LSU, even a South Carolina, just a bigger program than Toledo, it's no question that Quinyon Mitchell is a top 10 pick. I think his tape and what he did in pre-draft workouts shows what he's capable of. Phenomenal read and react. Gave up, I believe, the fifth lowest over the last 3 years reception rate out of any defensive back, regardless of position, in the NCAA. Now, are Toledo playing elite teams every week? No. But the thing that stands out with Quinyon Mitchell, he shuts down the elite guys when Toledo does play elite teams. So for me, his speed, his athleticism, his ball skill, just reading and reacting when the ball's in the air, how he covers. Raheem Morris is definitely going to be running a very similar variation of a Tampa 2 that we saw in Atlanta, that we saw in when he was as the defense coordinator in Atlanta, when he was the D coordinator with the Rams, when he was the head coach in Tampa Bay. And Quinyon Mitchell, for me, fits that Rondé Barber type of defensive back mold that you need in that type of system. So Quinyon Mitchell, phenomenal pick for the Falcons. And I don't see them going offense. You don't need to. You got Kirk Cousins, you have Bijan Robinson, you got Drake London, and you have Kyle Pitts. Figure out your tackle position. I think this might be I don't really see some of the tackles that are still available being exact fits, but Quinyon Mitchell, he is an early pick for me for Defensive Rookie of the Year, and I think he will run away with it in Atlanta in the system that they're going to put him in.
The next pick, we go back to a team that already had a pick with the Chicago Bears. Of course, this is their actual pick, with the other one coming via the trade with the Panthers. So we're with the Bears already having taken Caleb Williams, as everyone expects, where would they look to go with the next pick?
So everyone and their brother thought they were going to go Jalen Carter last year at defensive line. They didn't. They went offensive line instead. This year, pick number 9, I don't think they're going to surprise anybody. They're going to stay in state. I see them going with Jerzon Newton, the defensive lineman from Illinois. Very athletic, kind of reminds me of Kalijah Kancey from Pitt last year coming out of the draft. Does some things that are Jalen Carter-esque, but really for him, he is a run stopper. He can get in the backfield, he can disrupt. He is going to be the kind of guy that you put on the line and say, take up two or three defender or offensive linemen and then still get through them and get the running back before he gets 2 yards. He's a very athletic player, very similar to Quinyon Mitchell. I think if Newton is on another team besides Illinois, I think we're talking about him a lot more. That's saying something considering he's a top 10 pick. So Jerzon Newton, I think he's a good fit for Chicago. I think he's a good fit for what they're looking for defensively. And he should be a solid defensive lineman for the next several years with the Bears. So I'm going Jerzon Newton, defensive lineman, Illinois.
Next pick, number 10 with the Jets. Of course, one of the talks of the town a year ago after they trade for Aaron Rodgers and he gets hurt just 4 plays in the season. And the season then, of course, becomes the train wreck people thought would have happened, maybe even had Aaron Rodgers stayed healthy. And now the lines of thought are they get a weapon or they get a tackle in some way, shape, or form, whether it's in the first round or if they make some moves to either come back into the first round or try and acquire a second round pick, because I don't believe they have a second round pick. I think it's just first and third round in the top three. So where do you see the Jets going?
I see them going offensive line because the Mekhi Becton experiment just did not work. And the one thing that you can say very candidly was the problem last year with the New York Jets. Their offensive line was just bad. They do have good skill position players. Garrett Wilson is a former rookie of the year. Breece Hall came back and looked very dominant at times at the running back position. Do they have a lot of depth outside of those two of those positions? Okay, to be candid, probably not. But conspiracy theory tinfoil Rodgers is going to help you bring in other receivers probably post June 1st. And this is an extremely deep wide receiver class. So I don't see them going receiver here. I do see them going offensive line because I don't think it's as deep as an offensive line class. So I have them take Talisi Fuagua, the tackle from Oregon State. Very athletic, rangy. He's kind of the opposite of Mekhi Becton. Mekhi Becton was just Shrek, just this human wall running at you at full speed. Fuaga, he's a little more of a finesse guy. I mentioned Andrew Thomas earlier when talking about Joel Ull. Same vein as that. He's more of a finesse blocker, but that kind of works. It's very similar to what you get from David Bacrotti from Green Bay back when Aaron Rodgers was there. That type of style of offensive lineman, technician, not really a road baller. And I think Fuagua is a good fit based on the other linemen they have there. Plus, he's athletic enough. He could be dynamic. If you end up really liking one of your other tackle prospects that you have on staff, you can slide him to guard. You can put him on the other side if you want to rotate the tackles. I think he gives you a little bit more flexibility at the offensive line position. And he's just talented. He's just a very talented offensive lineman. So Talisi Fuagua, tackle for Morgan State.
Last year, the Vikings had, you know, some peaks and valleys. Justin Jefferson missed a good chunk of the year, but then they get the Pastrnak, and he comes in and lights a spark up until he doesn't, and the Vikings then kind of come very much well back down to earth. What do you see with the Vikings looking to do now in a post-Kirk Cousins kind of world?
Yeah, the Pastrnak, everyone thought he was the Apollo program. Turned out he was a Mercury or Gemini there. It's... We're going to get into space. We ain't going to stay there too long, but we're going to get there all the same. All kidding aside, I loved what Josh Dobbs did with this team last year. Just trying to kind of pull it out of nowhere on them and really help them out. I see this being the first reach in the draft. And it's hard to say it's a reach because the hype has been getting kind of absurd around him. But I'm going J.J. McCarthy, a quarterback out of Michigan. I don't personally believe J.J. McCarthy is a first-round worthy quarterback. I think he could be there in round two if it was a normal, sane year when it comes to quarterbacks coming in the draft. I feel there's, for some reason, a weird level of hype around him when, fundamentally, I think he was a very good, the expression I use, he was a very good babysitter at quarterback for that Michigan team that went undefeated. Now, no denying, they won games with him under center. And I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I think he's capable. And going to a team like Minnesota, I think that's going to mask a lot of his deficiencies because he gets to throw it up to TJ Hockenson, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison. I think you can get away with drafting a babysitter or a game manager at quarterback with the level of talent Minnesota has at their skill positions and the type of development they're getting from their offensive line. So J.J. McCarthy is going to be the pick. To be candid, he wouldn't be my pick, but I think he is going to end up being better than I anticipate him being. Not so much because he is a better quarterback than I think he is, but he's just going to such a good situation. I really think the fact that Josh Dobbs was able to be successful, the fact that, my goodness, the other guy that was there, the Hall, who played a couple games for them. The fact that he was decent in the system, he's going to do fine. And I think he does fit Kevin O'Connell's offense a little bit better than some of the like big arm quarterbacks that are out there, like a Michael Penix or even to some extent a Bo Nix in terms of what he does or Spencer Rattler. So J.J. McCarthy at 11. I still think it's too high for him. I'd kind of prefer to see Minnesota go after someone else at 11, maybe address their defense a little bit, maybe like a guy like Dallas Turner. But McCarthy's hype is getting too high. He's not going to be there at their pick they traded for at 23. He's just not. So you take J.J. McCarthy here, you figure out the other positions afterwards.
So you know me when it comes to the NFL draft. I don't typically go out on a limb, because I think just the art of itself with the NFL draft is very hard to do just in general. You know that about me.
I do, very much so.
The last time, though, that I felt the need to go out on a limb was with the name you also threw out there at some point or another, was with Mac Jones, and I didn't see it. I knew he was throwing to NFL wide receivers, and those wide receivers helped make him look to the part that now Alabama went on to win a national title that season.
Yep, and I would agree with that. Honestly, if you want a recent pro comparison, I would say Mac Jones. I think the only difference between Mac Jones and what J.J. McCarthy is going to have, Mac Jones had nobody in New England for skill position players. It was still going the old Bill Belichick way of, I can put whatever former Mac quarterback in as my wide receiver and they're going to get 1,300 yards. That just wasn't the reality anymore. I think with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, T.J. Hockenson, for the life of me, I do apologize, I don't recall who they have at running back at this point. So I don't know if they've addressed
they got,
that.
They got Aaron Jones, didn't they?
They did get Aaron Jones. Thank you. So Aaron Jones. I mean, they have those guys. They have Christian Darrisaw at tackle, who's really developed nicely. The defense is a little bit suspect. I think they're going to have to work on that and still in free agency and then in the later rounds. But J.J. McCarthy he's going to be everything that Mac Jones and Johnny Manziel hoped they would have gotten drafted into, where they already had elite skill position players. Because, I mean, make no mistake, J.J. McCarthy is going to the team with the best wide receiver in the NFL. Justin Jefferson is heads and shoulders the best receiver in the NFL. Jordan Addison is going to make a very strong argument for being one of the best wide receiver twos in the league. Hockenson's a top five tight end. Aaron Jones is a very underrated running back in the league. So I agree with you. Like Mac Jones, where he's throwing to Devontae Smith and Henry Ruggs and guys like that. It's like he had just talent all over the place. Johnny Manziel had Mike Evans to throw to. Mike Evans is still in the league. Johnny Manziel's doing whatever the hell Johnny Manziel does nowadays. It's McCarthy, and this is very worth knowing. I don't think McCarthy has the same personality issues as Manziel or Mac Jones. Just in terms of what you see on the field, I don't think he has it. But he's going to a situation where I think that's not really going to matter, if that makes sense. I think being able to throw to guys like Jefferson, Addison, Aaron Jones as his running back, he's going to be, it doesn't matter who's a quarterback in Minnesota, they're going to be good. It's just how good is he going to be, and is he going to cost them games versus helping them win games will be the question to actually grade McCarthy on going forward.
Next pick, we have the Denver Broncos, and not that it would have necessarily changed how they would approach the draft. They did just trade for another Wilson and Zach Wilson, so it wasn't too long for them to not have a quarterback named Wilson on their roster. But with that being said, what do we think the Broncos look to do?
Oh, well, first of all, if the draft does play out this way, most of the Broncos staff is going to be drunk by this point of the draft. Because this is just a disaster for them. They really, really need one of these top four quarterbacks to fall to number 12. Otherwise, I think they're trading out. That they have so many holes they need to fill on this team. I really don't see them staying here. So just to be candid, in my mock draft I actually put together, I actually had them trading with Detroit, who comes up and takes Dallas Turner. But I could also see Detroit staying specifically for Dallas Turner from Alabama, because they don't really have an edge rush threat right now. It's something that they do need. Sean Payton and his defenses over the years have always had a top-tier edge rusher, whether it was Cameron Jordan, whether it was Marcus Davenport, Peyton Turner for a little bit there. But really, Cameron Jordan's the one that stands out of that list. I think Dallas Turner gives you that type of ability. I think he's a top-tier edge rusher. I do have him as the best edge player in this draft. So I think whether it's Detroit, whether it's Denver, somebody's going to move into 12 to take Dallas Turner, because there's no way in God's green earth he makes it down to pick 20 or into the 20s, or someone can stay and just get him there. So whether it's Denver, I think Dallas Turner is a good fit for them. Brings that athleticism, brings that edge. If it's Detroit, I think you pair Dallas Turner with Aiden Hutchinson, and there won't be a safe kneecap in the entire NFL with Dan Campbell and his system. So really, it doesn't necessarily matter which team. I think Dallas Turner is going to be the 12th player drafted in this draft. So Dallas Turner, we'll say for the sake of this one, that's to the Denver Broncos.
At number 13, we have the Vegas Raiders, another team with a new head coach. I say new because it's different from the start of last season with Antonio Pierce, who then took over as the interim. What do the Raiders look to do? Because, I mean, they kind of, with once they made that change, they certainly, you know, started a trend towards being, you know, maybe not one of the best teams of the NFL, but they did beat the Chiefs, you know, near the end of the regular season last year.
Yeah, it kind of shows how much of a difference actually having a competent coach as opposed to a glorified man-child who just complained his way into positions in New England can actually do for an organization. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's almost like the guy backed out of one head coaching position because daddy didn't want him to leave yet. Man, I could go on. I never understood the Josh McDaniels fandom for him as a coach. It's like the guy was a pud from the beginning. Even in Denver, he was 5-0, and then he completely crapped the bed the rest of the time in glorious fashion. So notwithstanding, Antonio Pierce, great hire. I think Las Vegas learned their lesson from not hiring Rich Biasica the previous season when the players really liked what he was doing as their interim guy. So I think that they learned their lesson sticking with Antonio Pierce. I have them going offensive line. Colton Miller has been a phenomenal revelation at left tackle for them, but whiffing on Alex Leatherwood a couple years ago really set them back as an offensive line. I see them going Troy Fontenot, the tackle from Washington. Very athletic. Again, very much in the same vein as Talisi Fuagua. It's kind of like those Pac-12 tackles. Really just all kind of have that same mold. They're athletic. They're not really as beefy. They're not road maulers. They're more technicians. But I think that fits with what Las Vegas is going to try and do with that system. Don't get me wrong. They're definitely going quarterback sometime in their first three rounds. Aiden O'Connell is not the quarterback of the future for the Las Vegas Raiders. He looked decent at times, but there are much, much better quarterbacks that they can grab, and they can get them later in this draft. I don't see O'Connell being the guy, but whoever the guy is, you do need to keep him upright. So Troy Fontenot, tackle from Washington, I think he's a solid pickup for the Raiders.
And now we're starting to get towards teams that either were in the playoffs or on the cusp of the playoffs by and large a season ago. And we go to the New Orleans Saints, and, you know, they were another team that just kind of just seemed to be there, for lack of a better term, last year. There weren't really any highs and lows, except for if you maybe looked at like what the things Jameis Winston said or did. So where would you think the Saints look to go?
Oh, they've never replaced Terron Armstead at tackle. Trevor Penning, he looks good at times. He also looks like he might become a Rich Incognito type of head case as well. So I don't think it's not that he's bad. It's just, I don't think he's going to develop at tackle the way they want him to. So I do have them going offensive line here. I have them going Penn State. I know I'm going to butcher the name, so just bear with me as I try to say it. I believe it is Ulumuia Fashanu. I'm just going to call him Fashanu, not going to try his first name again. But this is a guy coming in the draft was considered the top tackle prospect coming in for a while. And then Penn State came back to earth pretty hard this season. This is, I don't think, any fault of his own. I think it's just a matter of the way the team played and how much better guys like Fuagua, Fontenot, and Joe Alt were during the season because their teams were just better. So I think Fashanu falls to New Orleans at 14, and I think New Orleans couldn't be happier. I mean, you do have Derek Carr there. I don't know if he's going to be the guy. I think they may have overreached on him a little bit financially. I know they need a receiver because it sounds like Michael Thomas is going to be released at some point if he hasn't been already. I think they're saving him as a June 1st cut. But you got to keep who's ever under center upright. You have to. So Fashanu from Penn State, I think he's a prototypical left tackle. You can move Penning either to the right side or inside to the guard position, and you can develop a pretty solid offensive line then going forward.
And last season, the Colts, I'd say, kind of snuck up on people just because no one really knew what to expect from that AFC South. And, you know, the Jags, you know, played a part in that with everything that went on with them as well. So for pick 15 with the Colts, they, of course, have Anthony Richardson. They hope to have a fully healthy season for him after his rookie season was cut short. Where do we see the Colts going?
And real quick, I need to go back to the Raiders for one particular thing. Completely forgot they signed Gardner Minshew, who may be one of the most entertaining players in the NFL, not because of what he does on the field.
Yeah.
At all. But the man is glorious. Like, Gardner Minshew must be protected at all costs. It's as simple as that. So that's why I also feel very comfortable with the Raiders sticking with tackle at their position. For the Colts, this is a no-brainer. You were a team that surprised a lot of people, and you did it with injuries and not really a full slate. I mean, you didn't get Jonathan Taylor back until week three. You lost Anthony Richardson, what, week four or five or something like that? And they were one blown drive against the Texans away from gaining the playoffs, which I'm sure a lot of Cleveland fans really wish they hadn't blown that drive, but that's not important. For me, it's you take best player on the board because you're already a good team. You have a lot of dynamic players and you've done some good things in free agency. It's Brock Bowers. You give a guy like Anthony Richardson, Michael Pittman Jr., Brock Bowers, Tyler Scott, and then Jonathan Taylor in your backfield. It's a very similar situation to J.J. McCarthy. It's you're building around a young quarterback with top-tier players. And I actually view Brock Bowers as actually a better tight end prospect than Kyle Pitts coming out. I just think a lot of people got burned by Kyle Pitts being number four overall. And that's why Brock Bowers isn't in the top 10 or top five. He's a very talented player. I think he's a all-purpose tight end. He can block, he can catch, he can run after the catch. He's athletic. I think he'd be a solid pickup for them and give Anthony Richardson another incredible safety net, where that way he doesn't have to necessarily rely on his legs. He can toss it off to Taylor, can toss it off to Bowers, try and go over the top with Pittman. It's a good fit, best player on the board. Brock Bowers goes to the Colts at 15. This is another good trade candidate, though, for a team later on in the draft who wants Brock Bowers. So looking at a team potentially like Arizona who might need a tight end, Dallas who may want to move up for a tight end, Miami's kind of in the tight end market, and not entirely. Cincinnati is a team that could definitely use a tight end. So this is another one of those guys. Indianapolis, Denver, the Giants, and the Patriots. Really pay attention to them as possible trade candidates. But for the time being, Brock Bowers is going to be a Colt.
And number 16, we have the Seattle Seahawks, and another team that will be breaking in a new head coach with the retirement of Pete Carroll. And what do we see? What do we see the Seahawks looking to do?
They're gonna go edge rusher. They need someone to match with that Legion of Boom they've been starting to put together, 2.0 version in the secondary. I think they go UCLA defensive end Leiatau Latu. Very competent DN. He's not flashy. Honestly, kind of reminds me of Brian Breesy last year from Clemson. It's nothing on his tape stands out because everything on his tape is good. He's just a good football player. How's he doing run defense? He's good. How is he on pass defense? He's good. How is he reading and reacting? He's just good. So I think he becomes the pick here. I think he jumps a few other edge rushers in this draft that may be higher ceiling, but maybe a deeper floor kind of situation. I think Latu gives you exactly what you expect. He's going to be a good player off the edge. He's going to do good things, and he's going to give you consistent effort. So Latu, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, defensive end from UCLA. I think he's going to be the pick here for the Seahawks. It's exactly the kind of guy like that Mike McDaniel in his time in Baltimore would have wanted coming off the edge.
In 17, we have the Jacksonville Jaguars. And like we said, expectations for them were certainly higher for them heading into last season. But between injuries and some other things going on, we're not able to really kind of get to that ceiling that they had in mind coming into last season. Where do we see Doug Peterson and company going at 17?
This is another one where they'd like to go into a time machine and invent the anti-injury ray. If they could pick that at 17, because they were looking so good. They just fell apart. For me, I know they've invested a ton of money in some different positions, and one of them being defensive back, I still feel they need help in the secondary. And you need help in the secondary. It doesn't matter what position. You just need secondary help. The guy that stands out to me is Cooper DeJean from Iowa. I think he's going to end up being a corner in the NFL. I think you can play him at safety. I think you can play him in the slot. He's really going to be able to do a lot of things pretty well. And with the talent already there in Jacksonville, they're not going to put him on wide receiver one at any point. He's going to be covering wide receiver two, maybe wide receiver three, maybe focusing on the tight ends when they go downfield. You're going to let him break in a lot better than what you would if he gets drafted by a team higher up in this draft. So Cooper DeJean, defensive back from Iowa, I think he's a solid pick for Jacksonville. Fits what they need, fits their mold, and should do pretty good. He's one of those guys that, as other DBs and other players in this draft have gotten hyped up, he's lost a lot of hype, and he hasn't really done anything to justify that. It's just everyone else has been hyped up more. So Cooper DeJean from Iowa should be Jacksonville's pick.
At 18, we have the Bengals. After a couple years of being at the very end of the first round, they're more back in the middle of the pack after an injury-plagued season with Joe Burrow and some other guys also being bit by the injury bug. Where do we see the Bengals going?
Well, as much as I want them to draft an offensive lineman, I don't think this is the spot to do it. I think you kind of missed the opportunity to go get one of the top tackles in this draft at this stage, so you're probably going to have to ride it out and hope that Orlando Brown gets back to Orlando Brown Bold. I think he was fine, but their right tackle position was a little iffy. I think the real issue that you saw this year for the Bengals is that they've never really come up with a legitimate Geno Atkins heir apparent in the middle. So I actually have them going defensive line, Byron Murphy, the second defensive lineman from Texas. The kid's just a human wall. There's no other way to describe him. He is just a monster of a human being. Very athletic for his size. I love his initial push. I love his hand placement when you see him against offensive linemen. Very much, I get a lot of Vince Wilfork, but more athletic and obviously a lot smaller vibes from Byron Murphy. So I think he's a good pickup for them. I don't think the defensive linemen field is as deep as other positions. I think Cincinnati can get away with finding a right tackle or a right guard in the second round. I think interior linemen, there's going to be more of them that are available than people let on. So I have them going Byron Murphy. I think he helps shore up that defense, helps bring that run defense a little bit back to earth, what it should be and what it has been in the past for the Bengals, and should be a good pickup for them.
And number 19, LA Rams, which I am a little confused on just because they usually don't have draft picks because they've been trading them all the way the last few seasons. So
yeah, I was going to say, they have a first-round pick this year?
Yeah, exactly.
Was 2016 the last time they had a first-round pick?
I don't know if it's quite that far, but it does feel like it's been a while. So where do you see the LA Rams going at 19?
Well, first of all, to the map to figure out, wait, what do we do in the first round? What? This is usually we give it to someone else for their all-star player. What happens? What do we do here? I see them going DB. They kind of gutted their defense a little bit, and frankly, with the loss of Aaron Donald, that secondary is going to have to get put to work a lot more than it has been in years past. I have them taking Terrion Arnold, cornerback from Alabama. Rangy guy, very similar in the same vein that you saw from Jalen Ramsey, that type of skill set, maybe not that level of skill set. I'm not suggesting Terrion Arnold compares to Jalen Ramsey, but he does kind of fit that mold, a little bit taller, a little bit lankier, more of a center fielder than he is like a big tackler, a big type of hitter, type of defensive back, and it's just something that they've been missing in L.A. So I think Terrion Arnold, solid pickup for them, should be a pretty good corner in the league and should fit Sean McVay's system pretty well.
At 20, we have the Steelers, and, I mean, death taxes and the Steelers finding a way to go around 500 and sneak their way into the playoffs. So what do we see the Steelers doing?
A statue for Mike Tomlin that should never be taken down in the city of Pittsburgh. That you give that man like a ham and cheese sandwich at quarterback, five people from the stands, and one halfway decent receiver with serious diva issues, and he's going to go 10-7. It just doesn't matter. So who do they pick? I don't know. Doesn't matter. They're going to go 10-7 again next year. But in all seriousness, I have them going Nate Wiggins, corner from Clemson. Joey Porter Jr. seemed phenomenal last year. Definitely stepped up, looked like a really solid pick, and just a good story that Joey Porter Jr. used to be on the sidelines with his dad when he played for the Steelers, was a ball boy for the Steelers, then becomes their cornerback one. You add Wiggins to the mix, pair him with guys like Minka Fitzpatrick, who I think Nick Chubb is going to run over with the fire of 1,000 suns the first time he gets to see him next season. But Wiggins brings the things that Joey Porter isn't necessarily great at. Hey, he's a good complement to what Porter can do. So I think he's a solid pickup for the Steelers. And again, it does not matter. They're going to go 10-7 and make the first round. It doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know what deal with whatever divine or demonic entity Mike Tomlin and the Steelers made to always be just in the playoffs. Doesn't matter what they do. It boggles my mind.
21, we have the Miami Dolphins. Of course, a very good regular season, which was, you know, the peak was the 70-point game they put on the Broncos early on in the season. But, you know, as the season progressed, they weren't quite able to live up to the high standards they had set for themselves, you know, due to that good early part of the season, and then losing to the Chiefs in the opening round in the worst weather that was stupid cold. Don't know how they even played football that day. But where do you see the Dolphins going at 21?
Side note, I don't even know why they played the game like that. They moved other games, but they let Kansas City get away with that. That was a freebie for Kansas City.
Yeah.
That's not important. With the Dolphins, they're one of those interesting teams because I don't really think they have holes. It's kind of a best player available, but I don't really think best player available fits this position either. I think they need to go not a big reach, but just a little bit of a reach here. I think they're going offensive line. I think they go J.C. Latham from Alabama. I think he's a good tackle. I think he ends up being a right tackle or maybe a guard in the NFL, but I know they invested in Terron Armstead, gave him a lot of money. I know they have Mitch McGlinchey that they signed. They have a decent interior. It's not necessarily a position of need. But the fact of the matter is the Dolphins consistently find themselves working with a second or third string offensive lineman. Why not have someone that you can move one of those starters back and make them a rotation guy instead? A guy like Latham, typical Alabama tackle. Fast, kind of big, not really that big. Footwork leaves a tiny bit to be desired. Same thing with initial pop, leaves a little bit to be desired. But fact of the matter is, when you have Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, and Tua as your quarterback, you don't need your offensive line to hold them for 5-6 seconds. You just need them to hold them long enough for Waddle and Hill to successfully slightly get downfield. So J.C. Latham, I think he's a good fit for what Miami does. I really am high on the Miami Dolphins this year. I actually do project them to win the AFC East. I think this will be the year that they do it. And I actually think they are a legitimate contender for the AFC title going forward this season.
I do have to correct you on one thing that Bree would make sure I fix had she heard you say it. His name is not Mike McGlinchey. It is Mike McFlinchey for costing them when Notre Dame played Georgia back in the day.
Yeah, he was Mike McFlinchey, wasn't he? I do remember that. Sorry to Notre Dame fans that pleased me for some reason when that happened, because I do remember them calling him McFlinchey and it was funny. But... oh, good Lord. Anyway, yes, McGlinchey. I see them moving him inside the guard and having Latham play tackle. But anyway.
Now we look at pick number 22 with the Philadelphia Eagles, and another team that, you know, started out so strong last season and then completely fell apart to the point where they were even questioning whether or not they should be bringing back Nick Sirianni or looking for another coach on the coaching carousel. So where do you see the Eagles going with this one?
Well, unfortunately, there's no Georgia Bulldog here that they should realistically take, as has been their recurring trend for like the last 2 or 3 years. But I do see them going SEC. I do see them going defensive back. And I think they go with probably one of the best names in the draft, and that is Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama. That Kool-Aid McKinstry is an interesting prospect because he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything bad. He's looked good through this draft process. But going from the presumptive top defensive back in this draft to falling to 22, at least in this scenario, may catch some people off guard. But the fact of the matter is, he didn't do anything bad. He didn't do anything to show that he's better than the guys ahead of him. At the same time, if that makes sense. I think Philadelphia is getting a great DB. I think this is a deceptively very strong defensive back class this year, especially obviously led by guys like Quinyon Mitchell. I think Nate Wiggins is a solid guy. Terry and Arnold has really stepped up big. But this draft was always going to be the Kool-Aid McKinstry draft for corners. So I think Philly gets a solid one. I think he's a good fit. And I do think Philly's going to win the NFC East. I think adding Saquon Barkley, some of the other players that they brought in, plus people that they're going to get healthy, I think they're going to get a better season out of Nolan Smith. You still have Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter on that defensive line. And I don't understand why people were going after Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts. That's just Philadelphia fans being Philadelphia fans, for my 2 cents. I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to be a force once again in the NFC.
At 23, we go back to another Minnesota Vikings pick, and couldn't tell you off the top of my head who this trade is from, but obviously it's from one of their other trades. So where do we see the Vikings going with yet another first-round pick?
So once again, this is a prime example of why you don't sell the farm for a single guy. This pick came from the Houston Texans, which originally came from the Cleveland Browns.
Ah.
So this is a pick that then led to the Houston Texans being able to get Stephon Diggs. So a friendly reminder to Cleveland Browns fans out there, Deshaun Watson has given the Browns 12 games and incredibly mid stats in that time, except for one half. But I swear to God, if you watch Cleveland Browns Twitter or social media, that one half was like Jordan's flu game or Brett Favre burying his father that morning and playing Monday Night Football that night, where he went 14 of 14 for 134 yards and one score. That's what you've gotten from Deshaun Watson. The Houston Texans have gotten Will Anderson, Damian Pierce, Christian Harris, and now they've gotten Stephon Diggs. Houston Texans won that trade overwhelmingly. And this trade now helps Minnesota, because Minnesota is actually going to be able to draft an absolute beast of a swing tackle and offensive lineman in Graham Barton. I think it's still too early for any of the running backs. I know they have Aaron Jones, but early for a running back. I don't see them needing another receiver, and certainly not wasting a first rounder on a receiver at this point. Defense, they could probably go a few different ways defensively, but I feel they've done a good job in free agency on the defensive side. So I see them go in depth. Christian Darrisaw is a very good tackle, but he has had a little bit of injury issues over the early stage of his career. You bring in a guy like Graham Barton, he can really play all five positions on the line. So you could have him slot in next to Darrisaw. You could have him slot in next to Ezra Cleveland as the center. You can really play him just about anywhere, and I think he'll be a good fit for that. And he's not going to have to carry the load as an offensive lineman. He's not going to have to be the guy right off the bat. I think he'll end up being a good player, probably more of a rotation guy. But frankly, for Minnesota, this is kind of a luxury pick. You got your quarterback already in J.J. McCarthy. You still have some picks coming up later in the draft where you can address some of the other positions of depth. This is kind of a luxury pick. This could also be a possible trading spot too. So throw Minnesota at pick 23 on that list of teams. I've been reminding you guys, hey, they could trade. Pay attention to this position and pay attention to this pick because they could trade it here. But if they stay, I think they go Graham Barton. He fits what they need on the offensive line.
At pick 24, we have the Dallas Cowboys, a team already you mentioned you don't see, you know, being super duper good this coming season as they were this past season. And with their early playoff exit, the questions were certainly raised. I know you and I both raised those questions as well. So where do we see the Cowboys looking to go?
Desperately hoping that Mike Vrabel will accept the head coaching job next year when they fire Mike McCarthy. That's where they go. I think they go offensive line. I think losing Tyron Smith, they never replaced Travis Frederick at center. Zach Martin is starting to get up there in terms of years and in terms of age. The fact of the matter is it's too early for a guy like Jonathan Brooks at running back. You could, in theory, go wide receiver here, but I think you'd be reaching just a scotch based on other needs that you have. I have them going center. I think they go Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon. The guy is a phenomenal interior lineman prospect. He's right up there with Tyler Lindenbaum from a couple years back as a lot of people presume a can't-miss center prospect. Very Ryan Jensen vibes when you watch him play. Kind of a baller. He likes to get in your head, likes to get after you. And I think he could give Dallas's offensive line a bit of a new identity as Dallas tries to figure out what in God's name they're doing, because fact of the matter is right now it's CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott versus the world. And I don't know how well that plays this coming up season. But we'll see. Dallas always has a habit of being able to pull things together. I think they could again this year. But it also wouldn't surprise me if they kind of stumble a little bit and end up with a much, much higher pick next year. But one of those needs will not be center. I think Jackson Powers Johnson ends up being a solid center for them going forward and a good permanent replacement to Travis Frederick, who they've kind of been bouncing around over the last few years trying to find a solid guy at the center position.
Now we get to pick 25 with the Green Bay Packers, and once again, they seem to have figured things out because Jordan Love turned out to maybe be better than everybody thought he was going to be, because of course he is. So where do we see the Packers looking to go at 25?
I would like the record to show that I liked the Jordan Love pick, and I have the receipts to prove it from when they did draft him. But that's a conversation for another time, because I know I've missed on a few other ones over the years, and I did really miss on Joe Burrow when we had the freezing cold takes guy on.
Joe Burrow.
I was a lot tamer than we all remembered I was with that one. I think Green Bay's really figured it out. I mean, you end up bringing in Josh Jacobs. You still have Christian Watson. I think Jaden Reed proved himself to be a very talented receiver. I think they did build another solid stable of second-round wide receivers. And even this year's draft, there's going to be a lot of guys still in round two or three, guys like Keon Coleman, Roman Wilson, if you want one of those big, you know, power forward type of jump ball wide receivers. They're going to be there in the second and third round. So I don't see them going that, but they do need help in the secondary. Eric Stokes and Jaire Alexander are great as corners. Their safeties, frankly, leave a little bit to be desired. I see them going safety. Tyler Nubbin or Nubin, I don't know how he says it particularly, safety from Minnesota. Very similar type of player to Antoine Winfield Jr. And Antoine Winfield Jr. was a Defensive Player of the Year candidate this year. And very similar style of receiver read and react skills to Budda Baker from Arizona. I think Nubin is a phenomenal safety prospect. I think the fact that they'll kind of get to hide him a little bit in that secondary with Stokes and Alexander is going to be a good thing. And he will develop as time goes on. Minnesota seems to pump out good secondary players, and I think this will be another one of those. So Green Bay goes defense, Tyler Dubin, safety from Minnesota, I think is a solid pickup for them.
And now we get to one of your favorite teams with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And would you mind if I do my attempt at what you would like them to take?
You know what? I'll bite. Go ahead. I want to see who you think I want them to take.
So when it comes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they have a receiver. They have Mike Evans. They have Chris Godwin. So they don't need a receiver just yet. Maybe a little later on in the draft, but not this high. Same thing for running back. They could get a running back, but not in the first round. So you got to go defense. And for me, I'm looking at Jared Verse from Florida State.
Okay, so first of all, I hate you because you're 100% right. I have them taking Jared Verse. From Florida State. Oh, I hate you so much. You got that one completely right. That was my thought process. Top to bottom. Oh, God. I don't like you right now.
I love it so much.
I just don't like you right now. It's as simple as that. But yes, Jared Verse from Florida State, edge rusher. Joe Tryon has been kind of hit and miss. They got something with Yaya Diaby last year. Kalijah Kancey looked good on the interior with Vita Vea. You could go linebacker here. Peyton Wilson makes sense to an extent because of getting rid of Devin White, but they seem really high on some of the guys that they've drafted over the past few years. It is too early for a wide receiver. I was thinking like a Donnay Mitchell or Xavier Worthy here, but I think you could find someone like that in the second round. Baker Mayfield signing the 3-year deal eliminates the need for someone like Michael Penix at this pick, where had Baker not re-signed, I think this becomes Michael Penix no matter what. But for Jared Verse, I kind of view him as he's a feast or famine guy. He's either going to be a complete bust or he's going to be Javon Kearse. I think there's no middle ground with who he is as a player. So God, I so don't like you. I so don't like normally I like you, you know, you're my dude. I love working with you, but in this particular moment, I'm actively rooting for your failure. Just very briefly, because you got that so spot on my thought process where Tampa Bay was going to go. And it bothers me. It actually bothers me. But yeah, Jared Verse, defensive end, Florida State. That's where Tampa's going to go with this one. So stole my thunder. I was going to talk about Baker having a great season and the Bucs shocking everybody the way they played. But never mind. You got to do your impersonation, and you got it spot on with the pick, too. So let's just move on to Arizona at 27.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah. That.
How did you know? That's my thing. How did you know?
It was kind of a shot in the dark. I mean, I figured defense, and the name just stood out. So I went with it.
God, am I that predictable? Is that the problem? Like, no, you're the problem. This is the Simpsons thing. Maybe this is the problem. No, it's Lance Morris. No, that's the problem.
It's the kids who are the problem.
It's the kids that were the problem. Oh, holy hell. God, that was good. I applaud you, sir. Well done. The impression of me is terrible, but everything else was spot on with my thought process. Even me saying running back and receiver in the later round. God! Oh, that... Let's just move on.
Oh, so as you said, pick number 27 is the Arizona Cardinals, another team that has already selected... In the first round, you had them taking Marvin Harrison Jr. at pick number 4. So where do the Cardinals look to go at 27?
Well, I think they stick in Tallahassee. I think they're going Braden Fisk. I think this may be a little bit higher than some people thought going into the draft where Braden Fisk would get drafted. But he has just been lights out in the pre-draft workouts. And people started actually paying attention to his tape and realized that he wasn't bad. Like, his stats were not amazing this year. It's not that he was bad. Same thing with Jared Verse. Kind of iffy stats this season. The fact of the matter is they were getting double, triple teamed every play. And they were still making plays, the two of them. So I see them going back to back here. Braden Fisk, I think, is a great interior defensive linemen. I actually have him graded a little bit higher than Tavondre Sweat from Texas, who I think would be the next defensive lineman off the board, like interior guy. But what Fisk brings to the table, I think, is something that Arizona's lacked. Someone with a mean streak. They haven't had it since their brief time having J.J. Watt. It's you just need someone that he looks across the offensive line, immediately decides that he hates the guy he's going against and wants to make that guy's life a living nightmare for the next 60 minutes. And I think that's what you get from Braden Fisk. I think he's very talented, has a lot of skill, and could develop into a very solid interior defensive line.
At pick 28, we have the Buffalo Bills, and I mean, they just almost, I guess you could say, they outsmarted themselves a little bit near the end of that Kansas City Chiefs game, and they end up losing to the then eventual Super Bowl champions. And since then, not that I would say it's a complete teardown, but they've let a lot of players go, including already, as you mentioned, trading Stephon Diggs. So what do we see the Bills doing?
Well, it's very similar to the Giants wanting to draft a time machine, because I think they're going to be bad. I honestly think this might be the end of the Sean McDermott era in Buffalo. They have just had such an aggressive teardown. I mean, defensively, they're only bringing back one starting DB, one of their linebackers, and two of their defensive linemen at this point. You already traded Stephon Diggs. You let Gabe Davis walk in free agency. You didn't really do much in terms of the running back market, so I think they're sticking with the guys that they have on staff, or they're really just kind of putting it in Josh Allen's hands and saying, fix it. And I don't know. I love Josh Allen. I love what he does as a player. I don't think he has that kind of skill set to just fix the problem. So I see them going wide receiver, obviously, because they don't really have a wide receiver. I think this is going to be Brian Thomas Jr. To be candid, there's better receivers in the draft. I think Adonai Mitchell is a better receiver. I think Xavier Worthy could be a better receiver. I think Jalen Polk is another guy that could potentially be better. I think they got rid of Stephon Diggs for a reason, though. And I think that reason is the same reason they're not going to draft Adonai Mitchell. They're not going to draft Xavier Worthy. They're not going to draft Jalen Polk. I think they want someone who's no nonsense. Brian Thomas Jr. just seems like the type of receiver that puts his head down and just does the work. So I think he'll be a solid fit for them. I think he immediately steps in as wide receiver one. And to be candid, I like what he does. I like his style of play. I think he's a fluid route runner. I think he's got a good, quick step. He's got a great cut step when he has the ball in his hands. I think he can do some good for Buffalo and kind of help ease the loss of your top two receivers. And he will pair nicely, I think, with Dalton Kincaid, who kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit last year, but he had a pretty solid season as a rookie in Buffalo for himself. So I like Brian Thomas Jr. here at number 28. I think Buffalo will like him. I think Josh Allen is going to develop a good rapport with him. I don't know if it's going to be enough to save this season, though, for Buffalo. It might be a rough year up in Orchard Park.
And now we get to the teams that were in the final four. So we start at 29 with the Detroit Lions, the fighting Dan Campbells, the kneecaps, whatever awesome name you have for the Lions at this point. What do you see with the Lions doing to pick 29?
First, let's address the elephant in the room. Those new Detroit Lion jerseys, mwah, chef's kiss, no notes, perfect. Absolutely perfect, down to every detail. Mwah, love them. So nice to see them go back to a lot more of a traditional look for them. So many teams figured it out. Go back with the old school looks. The fans love it. Miami still refuses to do it. And Denver, I don't know what in God's name they made. Their new helmets have a bullet, for God's sakes, as their stripe going down the center of it. Teach their own. Denver totally swung and missed. The Jets look good with their legacy stuff. The Lions did a great job with theirs. Still curious to see what the Texans come up with their uniforms, but it seems like they're going to be pretty good. If Detroit does stay here, I just don't see it. I don't see them staying here because, like I said earlier, I really had this pegged as a place where Denver would trade with a team to get either back into the first round or to trade down in the first round to acquire more picks. Because fun fact about Denver, they only have pick 12 until like the fourth round. So they have a lot of holes. They desperately need to fill some of those spots on the team. So I'm going to stick with what I had on my mock draft. I am going to say that either Denver trades in and takes Detroit's pick, or earlier in the draft, they trade out of 12. Detroit takes Dallas Turner. And in this spot, I see Denver taking Bo Nix, quarterback from Oregon. I think Bo Nix ends up closing out the quarterbacks in round one. Part of you wants to say it's Michael Penix. It could very well be Michael Penix. Sean Payton does like quarterbacks with howitzers for arms, but I don't think they have the receiver core right now to really stretch the field. I mean, Cortland Sutton is, God love him, he's by himself. That was one of the saddest tweets I've ever seen when he posted the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when the house was empty after Jerry Jeudy got traded.
Yeah,
it was like, bless his poor heart, that man is really all alone out there. But I think with what Sean Payton does as a quarterback guru, I think a guy like Bo Nix really makes a lot of sense, or Michael Penix. In this case, I have it as Bo Nix. I think he brings a lot to the table. He's a little bit older, so he's going to be a little bit more pro-ready. I think his body is a little more pro-ready than Penix, just because he doesn't have the level of injury history. And I think what Denver is going to have to do this season in terms of their personnel, I think Bo Nix is a better fit at quarterback. I think they're going to have a lot of checkdowns. I think Javonte Williams is going to have a monster season, very similar to what you saw with Alvin Kamara at the height of Sean Payton's time in New Orleans, or with guys like Reggie Bush when he was there as well. He's going to be a receiving back out of the backfield. They have Sutherland going over the top. They're going to have to figure out someone in the middle, which is what rounds maybe later on, or if they trade back with Detroit and actually get their second round pick, maybe round two or maybe later on. But I just don't see Denver walking out of the first round without a quarterback. I just don't. And I think the quarterbacks are going to be gone way early in round two. Then you're going to have to kind of sit on it. So I see them pulling the trigger, coming back up in the first round or dropping back. Either way, I think they're making a trade with Detroit, and they're going to take Bo Nix, quarterback from Oregon.
Now we go to pick number 30. We have the Baltimore Ravens, the two-time MVP Lamar Jackson and company now. They've, of course, made some moves as well in the offseason. So where do we see the Ravens going?
This one is kind of a hard pick because I don't really – it doesn't make sense how Baltimore hasn't won a Super Bowl with this team. It just doesn't. I mean – find me a genuine deficiency on this roster. It's hard to find. I mean, you lose J.K. Dobbins. Okay, you replace him with Derrick freaking Henry. Like, do you need wide receivers on this team? You don't. Who's going to get the ball? There'll be 50 carries between Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson every game, and they'll somehow still win by 17. It's like, it's a tough way to go and tough way to pick for this team. They don't really have a lot of deficiencies. I don't think they go offensive line. I think their offensive line is kind of settled in right now. I think there's a little bit of question marks about Rashad Bateman. Zay Flowers did look good last year. But outside of that, I think the receiver room's a little bit more in flux, and there's been a guy that's been kind of rising up the board as of late. And I didn't really peg him as a first-round pick, but I see him going to Baltimore a lot, so I'm just going to kind of lean into it. I see Ladd McConkey, wide receiver from Georgia, going here at pick 30. I think he's a Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman type of receiver. He's going to be a little bit of a do-it-all kind of guy. And build, I think he even is reminiscent of Zay Flowers in terms of his ability and what he does on the field. And I think it's a great fit for what they have at quarterback with Lamar Jackson. You don't really need someone who's an incredible route runner. You need someone that can do the scramble drill better than anybody else. That's what made Zay Flowers successful last year in this offense. That's what, for the first year that he was there, Marquise Brown looked good. I think McConkey can do that as well. I think he's a little bit more of a scramble receiver than people let on. And he's just very efficient and does a lot of things well. So kind of a best player on the board type of thing. They could go offensive line here. I don't really think they will. I kind of feel they've addressed some of their offensive line issues over the last two seasons. So I'm going to say Ladd McConkey. I think his hype train takes him all the way to Baltimore, pick 30.
At 31, we then have the Super Bowl runner-ups in the San Francisco 49ers, a team that, you know, just along with the Ravens, were viewed as one of the most dominant teams throughout all of last season, but just couldn't quite do it in the Super Bowl last year against the Chiefs. So what do you see the Niners doing?
They're going to draft anyone who can be the head coach from the fourth quarter going forward for their team. I don't know who they'll take as a player, but they'll give Kyle Shanahan like a coloring book and a lot of crayons and have him go to the side and let anyone else coach from the fourth quarter forward in any playoff game situation that they're close in. Just God love, I do not know how that man has such bad luck and bad decision making in the final moments of games like that. It's just amazing. But to answer your question, I see them going offensive line. I think they need help on the interior. And a guy like Amarius Mims, the tackle from Georgia, I think he'll rotate in to guard at the pro level. So I see them going that route. Mims, pretty fast guy. He'll fit with the Christian McCaffrey offense that they have there. He'll fit with what Deebo Samuel brings to the table. Fits with what you get out of Brock Purdy and maybe Brandon Ayuk, question mark, if he's still a San Francisco 49er by the end of the draft. I actually think Pittsburgh will pull the trigger and actually pull off a trade to get Brandon Ayuk to pair with Russell Wilson or Justin Fields and then George Pickens. So I don't know if Ayuk is actually still going to be there. If that's the case, if he is traded in round one, I think this immediately becomes Adonai Mitchell from Texas. But for the time being, we're going to assume Ayuk stays in San Francisco. John Lynch does not seem keen on trading him at all, so they'll probably end up keeping him. I'm going to say Amarius Mims. I think they help their offensive line get some offensive line depth and pray to all that's holy that they don't run into Kansas City or really any AFC team in the Super Bowl, or at least have enough of a lead in this fourth quarter that they don't have to actually worry going forward.
And lastly, we have the Kansas City Chiefs, the back-to-back Super Bowl champions. Where would they look to go?
Back-to-back-to-back? I don't know. It's kind of hard to see a team actually being able to keep up with them the way they play, but I do see them going wide receiver, especially with recent issues with Rashee Rice off the field. It looks like he may be facing a multiple-game suspension for the incident that occurred with him. They didn't really have a lot of great receiver play to begin with. When you're legitimately lining up Kadarius Toney as your wide receiver too, you have let some things go really sideways really fast. And I think they just need a stable presence, someone who's got speed, someone who's got athleticism, but is, how do I say this politely, not the potential for a head case type of situation. And for me, that's Troy Franklin, wide receiver from Oregon. Troy Franklin's one of those guys that definitely has been lost in the shuffle over the last several years, but has consistently been one of the best receivers in the Pac-12, regardless of who's been his quarterback. So I like what he brings to the table. I think he's a very steady presence at wide receiver. I think he's someone who's got more speed than his tape actually shows. So I think in the Kansas City offense, he'll kind of fit what they like to do with their receivers. He's not necessarily small, but he's not big either. So he kind of fits that more compact wide receiver build that they like. He's got the speed, he's got hands, and frankly, he's just going to be a better option than about 90% of what they have in their wide receiver room right now. Once Rashee Rice comes back, it becomes a very deadly two receiver combo. You still have Travis Kelce. So Kansas City is just going to get better with this pick, and they're back-to-back champs until someone else can step up to the plate and really bring them to task. I think they're the presumptive favorite to win it again and be picking at pick 32 in 2025 as well.
And last thing I got for you before we look to wrap this up, and I don't have any quabbles with anything really throughout what you have mocked as the first round, but – Explain to me how. Explain to me like I'm five. I'll use one of your favorites. Explain to me like I'm five. Why there is just seemingly no hype for Michael Penix Jr. Like I feel like he's the most, maybe not the most pro ready of anybody in the draft, but I feel like if you put him in, you're going to have a decent offense if you have enough pieces around him.
The simple fact of the matter is his injuries. That's exclusively why, which I think is a stupid rationale, just to be candid, because he then proved he's able to come back from injuries and actually be better. And you don't need him to run around. Like, the problem that you have is, and I'll just be candid, it's a bit of a stereotypical thing. They expect someone like Penix Jr. to be an improv guy. They don't really want him to be a pocket passer, which is more of what he is. But he still runs a 4-5. He's going to be athletic. They don't like that he's 24. Well, Bo Nix is 24. What's the problem here? It's just that no one can get past the injuries. And I don't know why. Because if you want my opinion, I'll go ahead and say this. I've mentioned more than once that I don't have Caleb Williams as my number one quarterback. I had Caleb Williams as my number three quarterback in this draft. I went Jaden Daniels. Then I went Michael Penix Jr. I think Penix Jr. is going to be a massive hit wherever he lands. Like, I don't have him in round one, and that's just because I don't. The teams that I thought would take him, I could see Denver trading up to get him. I really could. If I could see them deciding that they want his arm strength, because it is very reminiscent of Drew Brees, the type of arm strength that he has. I could see Denver going that route. So I might end up changing that and saying instead of Bo Nix, it's going to be Michael Penix Jr. But Tampa was really going to be the top landing spot for him. But then Baker Mayfield had a Pro Bowl year and got a new contract. Do not get drafted a 24-year-old to sit behind Baker Mayfield for 3 years. Arizona could have gone Michael Penix, but Kyler Murray came back and he looked good. You don't necessarily need to go there. Minnesota already took J.J. McCarthy because the hype train is just through the roof on that one. Brock Purdy turned out to be that guy in San Francisco. So it's just some of the places that could have been realistic landing spots for Penix have kind of evaporated. But I see him going very high in the second round. I mean, you look at the teams that are at the top of the second round. The Giants definitely need a quarterback. I could see them taking him. For Tennessee, I wouldn't be surprised if they gave him a once over. Honestly, even the Jets. I know they have Aaron Rodgers, but tinfoil man looks like he's starting to be made of tinfoil, and eventually time will catch up with him. You do a 1 year with Aaron Rodgers and replace him with Michael Penix, that could be pretty deadly. Las Vegas has Gardner Minshew, one of the most entertaining players in the history of the game, kind of like a WWE superstar. But if you can tell me you can have Michael Penix in the second round, I'm going to take Michael Penix in the second round and have him instead. So that there's places where he can land that he's going to be very successful. And to explain it to you like you're five, I don't know why. Because I think he's better than four of the quarterbacks that I had going in the first round. But I made this mock draft. I just didn't really want to be wrong. I think Penix isn't going round one. And I think that's stupid. I think it's a bad take by most of the NFL. And I think he's going to end up making a lot of teams pay in his pro career.
So with that, that'll do it for this episode of Lance and Matt Plus. Please rate, follow, review on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. Rate us 5 stars wherever you can. And that is how you help us grow. And that's how you let Matt and I know, hey, you're out there and you want to hear more.
We do like our listeners. We're friendly. We're housebroken. We don't bite. I mean, tune in, like, subscribe, click on. We have fun episodes. We do all sorts of fun stuff. Make sure you tune in. And in the meantime, feel free to tune in. Let me know how wrong I am come Thursday. So...
And to do just that, follow us on Twitter. You can find me at Lance on the Mic, and Matt is Matt C WFOB. And you probably think you're so dang clever for that just flowing the way it flows.
It does. Like, it's silky smooth, isn't it? Just works so much better than my old one. I'm so happy with it.
So again, that'll do it for this episode. Again, drop a like, follow, whatever you can do on your platform of choice to let us know you're out there and for future episodes of Lance and Matt Plus. We'll talk to you guys in the next one.